Nick Pope with us as we talk about UFOs, all kinds, and we'll take your calls this hour with him as well, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Nick Pope with us. Nick, going back to one of our original observations from Kenneth Arnold when he saw back in 1947 the series of UFOs. What do you think he saw?
Well, again, I think it's a fairly narrow band of possibilities here. I don't think there was any realistic chance that what he saw was Soviet. I mean, I know there's been a lot of speculation about long-range reconnaissance missions or bombers and such like, but I don't think that was the case. I think, frankly, you know, it was either our own tech being test flown, you know, all sorts of things on the drawing board there, but what actually came to fruition, still after all these years, probably the official history of all these black programs has not yet been written, probably never will be, or it was from somewhere further afield, as they say. One of the euphemistic phrases that we use for the extraterrestrial hypothesis. People in government never like to come out and say it, so we use all these euphemisms, and sometimes you'll even hear foreign used, and of course it's one of these great phrases. Foreign can mean anything you like.
Well, it was a couple of years after World War II ended. Could it have been Nazi technology?
I think that what the Nazis had, they used. By the end, of course, it really was total war. Now, I'm not saying they didn't have things on the drawing board, and clearly in many respects the Nazis were ahead of us in terms of the technology. The V-2 was extraordinary. The Messerschmitt 262 jet fighter, ditto. So they had things on the drawing board and in limited numbers, too late to win the war because of the bombing campaign against German factories, but it's possible that they had some things that we were then able to appropriate, improve on, etc.
And you've also talked about a square kilometer array telescope. How does that fit into the picture?
Well, it's one of my kind of favorite what ifs about this whole subject. There are, of course, a number of huge radio telescopes that are currently scanning the skies, and if one day they pick up a signal from another civilization, that might be one of the ways that we'll get to find out about all this in a way that will put the subject beyond debate. But my point about the Square Kilometer Array is that's the next generation radio telescope, and that's going to be sufficiently powerful that, just to give an analogy that I've heard used by some of the scientists involved, it would be able to pick up something that generates about the power output of an average airport radar system to a distance of about 50 light years. In other words, if there are civilizations out in our small corner of the Milky Way galaxy, once we turn on first we have to build it, but once we turn it on, it goes online. If there are other civilizations out there, it just might be like flicking a switch and seeing all the lights come on. And it's suddenly all the debates about cover-ups and conspiracies and sightings go out of the window, and we just learn we're not alone. They're out there. There they are. So it would be one way of cutting through all of this.
It would be exciting if it happened that way, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. So I urge people, I mean, obviously the Chinese have a big new radio telescope, but the Square Kilometer Array is going to be orders of magnitude above and beyond what we currently have. And now they keep juggling the dates, and there are all sorts of issues about the construction. But I hear 2024. I mean, they have a website, just so I'd encourage anyone who wants to take a look to explore the website, which is, I think, just, put in Square Kilometer Array and it will come up.
Let's go to the phones now. Let's start by going to our international line. We're going to Toronto, Canada. Norman's with us. Norman, go ahead.
Hi, everyone, by the way. I want to ask your guest about the the Sag Harbor incident in Nova Scotia. Now, I find that significant because there was a body of water involved in a craft supposedly coming in and out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
In that respect, it differs from Roswell and Randolph Forest in the UK. What I'm particularly interested in is why has it been kept under the wraps and why is there so little known about it? It seems that once the U.S. Department of Defense gets involved in consultation, suddenly everything goes quiet. So I was just wondering if your guests could comment on that. Thanks very much.
Sure thing. Absolutely. The Sag Harbor incident, of course, happened back in 1967. And did you ever study that one, Nick?
Not in a huge amount of depth, but I know that the Royal Canadian Navy were involved, as was the Air Force. And interestingly, despite this being essentially a Canadian case, of course, the Condon Committee had a look at this. Now, the water connection is interesting. I don't know whether this case is real or not. But again, one can't help but notice this pattern that comes up on many, many occasions of UFOs seen in close proximity to the water. And of course, my goodness, the first half of the show was almost devoted entirely to the U.S. Navy encounters. And of course, what we didn't really have time to get into, but the details are out there, is some of the pilot testimony suggests that this tic-tac-shaped UFO, to use the phrase that's been bandied around, seemed to be capable of flying in and out of the water with impunity. So this idea, and that would obviously involve some sort of radically different propulsion system. So I'm not sure. I don't know the ins and outs of the Sag Harbor case. Interestingly, they have an annual conference, and I think I've been asked to speak up there next year. So I will doubtless make some local connections there. It's an interesting case. I know it's controversial. Like a lot of these incidents, half the people seem to say, no, it was a hoax, and the other half say, well, it was something, maybe extraterrestrial, but maybe even something like a fireball meteorite and misperception. So I'm on the fence on that one, but it's a fascinating case for sure.
A lot of people reported seeing this glowing object by the water, and they called newsrooms, newspapers, and everything, and the reported witnesses saw these strange glowing objects flying all over the place, primarily around Halifax. Something happened out there, Nick.
Oh, yeah. There's, if you'll excuse the joke, there's no smoke without fire.
Well, that is so true. Back to the calls. Let's go to Ray, truck driving in Texas. Welcome to the program, Raymond. Go ahead.
Hey, George, Nick. Hey, I got a sort of a hairball question. When these drones go all over the world that are man-made, ours, our drones, how do they talk to them? Through satellites?
Yes, they're in a technical connection by a satellite. There's a control room somewhere, and they're able to monitor everything that's going on with these drones, but it's all done by satellite. Incredible technology, Nick, isn't it?
Absolutely, and there are a couple of really good movies out there about it, which within the confines of not wanting to show anything that's classified and that would give away sort of tactical and strategic information about this. There are a couple of just very entertaining movies out there. I think there's one with Helen Mirren, and there's another one, I can't remember, is it Ethan Hawke? But it's probably an area, A, that I don't know a huge amount about the actual technicalities, and B, if I did, I probably couldn't say. But yeah, absolutely, this is. And the other point about all this, of course, is that I think what I can say without getting into trouble is that it's universally acknowledged that the technology that we have for these sorts of things runs at least a decade, maybe much more than that, ahead of anything that's publicly declared. So that's always something that has to be factored in to the UFO investigations, that aviation technology, whether it's aircraft, missiles, or drones, is probably around, as I say, anywhere between 10, 15, 20, some even put it higher than that, years ahead of what we think it is.
Did you find, too, that by being on the Ministry of Defense looking at the UFO cases, that that's what convinced you that these things are real?
Yes, we probably had a better idea than most about what's flying. We knew, even if we weren't cleared for every single blank program, which self-evidently we weren't in that deeply compartmentalized universe, but we had a, in general terms, a very good idea of our own level of tech and a pretty good idea through intelligence sources of what other nations had. So that's the way in which we were able to sort of draw a line and say, well, you know what, that could well be one of ours. But then we get another case and say, wait a minute, we can't do that.
Back to the calls. Brian in Indianapolis is now with us. Hey, Brian, go ahead.
Hey, George, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Hope you are, too.
Yes, sir, I am. I'm working. Hey, listen, it's going to be pretty darn cool when this all comes out and they tell us that they've been lying to us for years. Of course, they've been lying to us for centuries anyway, our federal government. But I want to talk about the videos from these aircraft and these encounters. I read an article where the former director, Luis?
Elizondo.
Elizondo, yeah. He was talking about the G-forces that they were looking at were somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 to 500 Gs. Now, an F-16 Strike Eagle has a G-force of 16 to 18 Gs, and what's the human body, 8 or 9 we can stand for just a short period of time?
Maybe 6.
Yeah, I don't think that the Russians or anybody like that has the technology that advanced. There's no wings, no engines or anything. But Nick, what a great subject, and your reward and all the other hard work that you and your people have put in will come to fruition. You'll be highly rewarded.
Yeah.
My question is, you answered one of them about, I was wondering if during these encounters, was there any kind of communication? So obviously there hadn't been, but it makes me wonder why if they're out there and they've been out there, you know, for who knows how long, why wouldn't they just come to Earth and land and it just makes me wonder why they wouldn't do that and make everything so simple. Why does everything have to be so difficult? You know what I mean?
I absolutely share your frustration on this. I guess if we are dealing with something extraterrestrial, we perhaps could never hope to really get inside the head, understand the mindset. My goodness, when we struggle sometimes to understand what our fellow humans do and what we're thinking. So I think we might not even have the conceptual mechanism to understand extraterrestrial motivations. Why don't they land? I wish they would, but to the best of my knowledge, there was no communication, to pick up one of your other points there. That said, clearly, as the Navy interacted with these objects, there were all sorts of, look, there's a whole command and control system, there's imagery analysis, there's all sorts of other techniques that are used. There will be a lot more information out there about these objects sitting somewhere in the Pentagon, much more information than is publicly declared, and maybe that will be telling people within government and the military and the intelligence community something about the capabilities and intentions of all of this. But I don't know, and if so, I'm not sure we'll all get to see it.
What is your personal views, Nick, on the ATIP investigation and program?
Well, I think they clearly, the bottom line is that despite the years of denial, the U.S. government had a program looking at this. And it's fascinating to actually go back to think about the day before the New Year, the New York Times broke this story, that you could still find on government websites statements which said things like, no branch of the U.S. government is currently investigating UFOs, and this subject is of no interest to anyone in the military or the intelligence community. And I'm paraphrasing, but those sorts of statements were plastered all over the websites of the various agencies that got Freedom of Information Act requests about all this. I think they've all been quietly taken down now. I mean, ATIP clearly did a good job, but like everyone within government who struggled with this issue, I'm sure the people wanted to be better resourced. They wanted better engagement from senior managers in the Pentagon. I think Luis Elizondo has gone on the record to express his frustration about the lack of engagement from senior figures and just the lack of opportunities to really brief them on what was going on in our airspace. And I think that's one of the reasons why we see that now people like Luis Elizondo are taking forward this whole issue outside of government, and people like Steve Justice and Jim Semivan and Christopher Mellon, Luis himself, of course, are taking forward their efforts through this group that Tom DeLonge put together,
right?
To the stars. And good luck to them. Good luck to them. They clearly hit roadblocks within the Pentagon when they were looking at this, and I understand because I've hit those same sorts of roadblocks myself, and it's frustrating.
Let's go to Mark in Baltimore, Maryland before the break. Go ahead, Mark.
Yes, thank you for taking my telephone call.
Sure.
This is a fascinating subject. First of all, I want to say it's an honor and a privilege to speak to you, Mr. Pope. I was in the Navy from 1981 to 1989. I'm 59 years old.
Thank you for serving.
In 1981 and 1983, I was stationed aboard a USS Dwight D. Eisenhower aircraft carrier. I had a top secret clearance, and I was privy to ready room briefings and then ready room debriefings. And when the debriefings were over, I was in a fortunate position where I could speak to some of these pilots about things that they may have seen while they were on their missions. And they were told back then in the early 1980s not to talk about it, that
wow.
They couldn't. They told me they were told not to talk about it to their superiors.
Yes. I've absolutely heard similar things in the British military system. I've spoken to military pilots who have either chosen not to talk about this at all, or who have been kind of pretty much slapped down when they did speak out. I think the good news is that these recent policy changes seem to indicate that there's a healthy change of attitude on this. And now there seems to be, and my goodness, it's about time. We invest such a lot of time and money in these brave and dedicated men and women doing these jobs. So when they come back and say, this is what we've seen, we should trust them to know their business, and we should work with them on trying to get to the bottom of what they're encountering. Because make no mistake about it, as I've often said, whatever we're dealing with here, this is a defense and national security issue.
Well, it sure is. And Nick, we're going to come back and take some final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we're back with our final segment with Nick Pope. Nick, what are you working on these days?
Well, my goodness, lots of different things. Obviously, TV work is something that I do on an almost weekly basis, whether it's Ancient Aliens or other shows. But I'm developing some ideas myself, developing a couple of TV shows, and
hopefully
be able to announce something about that in you know, the next few weeks and months. So I've got that. My latest novel, Blood Brothers, is out there, and I'm interested in getting that turned into either a movie or a TV series. I'm doing lots of conferences, so getting out on the road and hopefully giving a people an opportunity to ask me questions in person. So, yeah, life is busy.
I always enjoy running into you at conferences, Nick. You're one heck of a guy.
Likewise. I think it's always interesting and fun.
It sure is. Yeah, give us a quick synopsis of Blood Brothers.
Well, essentially, sad to say, it's all too realistic in terms of what's going on in the UK and elsewhere. It's essentially the story of how radical terrorism is kind of hitting the streets, and it's about the special forces and the intelligence agencies combining to create a special new integrated team to go after the terror threat. And it's so realistic in one sense. And this wasn't just some sort of publicity stunt. I really had to get the manuscript security vetted by the UK government. So again, because I was writing about things, I served 21 years in the Ministry of Defence. Only 3 years was on UFOs. So obviously, a lot of counterterrorism and intelligence information. I wanted to do the right thing and not put anything in the book that would damage security. So they had to get the manuscript first.
We go to Mike in Reno, Nevada. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Yes, I know your local politics there, they're obsessed with Brexit and economic issues, but I wonder if you have any inkling of what your potential prime ministers might feel on this subject, or other world leaders, since I imagine you have a lot of scuttlebutt. And also, by extension, we have an election coming up. We have over 20 Democratic candidates. Do you think the question will be popped, or is it still the kiss of death? And I wonder what Trump really knows, particularly through his uncle, John Trump.
Interesting. I'm not sure many presidents know about the UFO cases. They've tried to find out, but I don't think a lot of them know, Nick. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, let me speak to the Democratic issue first. I think of all the potential candidates next time around, Andrew Yang is the only one who has spoken out on this issue, and he said he thinks, it's a very vague phrase, I think, he thinks UFOs probably exist, and that he's inquisitive and wants to know more. But I think we saw Hillary touch this issue quite a lot. We saw, my goodness, of years before that,
even her aide tried to find out, Podesta, right?
Absolutely. But then before that, we saw Denis Kucinich raise the issue, or it came up. The question of his sighting at Shirley MacLaine's residence came up in one of the Democratic presidential nomination campaigns. And then it was the kiss of death. It seemed to be the kiss of death for Hillary, though obviously it's just one of a number of issues. Don't know where the Republicans stand on this issue. I'm not sure when it comes to other world leaders that anyone is particularly going to grasp this nettle. And it is a nettle. I think it's one of these situations where everyone wants somebody else to go first.
Yeah, they sure do. Let's go to Cornelius in Louisiana. Hello there, sir.
Hello there, George and Nick. Boy, I tell you, I enjoy you on the History Channel, Nick, so I hope you get your show on the History Channel, because that's the only place I can see you.
Thank you.
George knows, and Tommy, I was a military police officer from 1979 to 1994, and the Army is now 244 years old, George, so salute the Army.
You got it.
We were the first, so... But anyway... And as a military police officer, we have security clearances and stuff, too. And I wondered, have you ever looked – I know you've done the Rendlesham Forest thing in 1980, but have you ever looked at any type of military police, security police, shore patrol, air police, anything like that? Because other than pilots, security officers are the they take a lot of good notes and everything like they did in Reynolds from Short Forest. I'll take my answer off there. Nick, God bless you, and George, take it easy.
All right, my friend. Go ahead, Nick.
Thank you. Yes, and on that point, one of the UK's other really well-known cases, generally referred to as the Cosford incident from 1993, huge triangular-shaped UFO flying over large parts of Britain. Some of the key witnesses there were actually Air Force police officers out on night patrol, and their report is part of the Ministry of Defence case file on that, and a very important part it was too. So yes, I think it is. It's the military police, the security and law enforcement personnel who are often at the sharp end of this, and who are sometimes the unsung heroes, because, you know, just often they are the people out, for example, on night patrol where everyone else is minding their own business. These men and women are out paying attention to what's going on, and yeah, sure, they see things.
Well, they sure do. Let's go to Janice in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hello, Janice. Go ahead.
Hi there. Good morning, George and Nick. I'm so pleased to talk to you both.
Hi.
From Wild West, Wyoming. I'm calling to tell you about a sighting my husband and I had about, it was about 10 miles south of Cheyenne on Chalk Bluffs Road. And we were out, very, very minimal light pollution. And we happened to look up, and there were, like, at different, we were probably looking for about 5-10 minutes. There were like 4 different points of light that came from different directions, but all converged on this one point and would disappear. So it made you think of either a wormhole or a tunnel or something like that. Have you ever heard of anything like that before? We have not been able to find that spot again, but just that night we did see that. So,
right. Sometimes, and I'm not saying this is the case here, but sometimes when you hear reports of lights converging, sometimes it's something that you see in association with certain laser and searchlight displays used, for example, at outdoor rock concerts, things like that. And in some meteorological conditions, you can get some very odd effects like that, where you can't necessarily see the beam of the searchlight or the laser, but you see reflections on clouds, and I've heard reports of you know, what are described as UFOs converging on a single point. Now, this may not be what you saw, but I just throw it in there as being a possible conventional explanation to some of those sorts of reports.
Okay, let's go to some more callers here. Let's go to Tom in Placerville, California, on the wildcard line. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Norrie. Nice to talk to you again.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call, and happy belated birthday.
Thank you, Tom.
And Mr. Pope, it just blows my mind how naive America is to this situation. Myself, I've seen 3 anti-gravity craft that I know were ours. But recently, May 24th, we're out at Pyramid Lake, Nevada, which is a pretty hot spot. And we were driving home about 12:30 in the morning, and my son saw something in the sky. We jumped out. We both had binoculars. It was partly cloudy night. And my son said it looked like it was coming in from space. And this craft, if you can imagine a passenger train at night with the lights, And half of the craft was lit up, and then there was a section of it that was turned out, and then towards the tail end there was some more lights. It looked like it was a straight line, and we'd seen planes that night flying to Reno Airport from there, and this was much higher. I imagine it to be probably 2 miles long, this craft. It was like none I've seen. I've seen other UFOs, but it had an agenda. I recently listened to an audio about who could have been on this craft, and that it was built maybe like 4 years ago. And I just wondered if you knew anybody or heard anybody that's seen it.
No, the only, I mean, that's clearly an immense object. I have heard of similar sized things before. I've occasionally heard people talk about literally a flying football field to try to give some sense of perspective to this. And I am aware of one pilot case from the UK where the pilot estimated that an object that he saw, which was also tracked on radar, was about a mile wide. But, these things, some of them are huge. And I'm not sure we need a new physics, which is a phrase that I hear bandied around, but we certainly need a reappraisal of our understanding of the laws of physics if some of the dimensions, speeds, and maneuvers of these craft are anything to go by. So I don't have a particular explanation for you. All I can say is I envy you for having seen something like that. And the good news is that, yes, I know people are naive about this issue, but I think there is the times are finally changing, so there's some good news, too.
Dr. David Jacobs believes that these visitations are very nefarious, that they're not good. What do you think, Nick?
Well, in military terms, there is actually an equation that defines threat, and we say that threat is capability times intent. We know some information about the capability, and it's pretty impressive. We don't know anything about the intent, really. So all we can say is that, therefore, the threat remains unknown. But in military terms, it's more prudent to assume that there's a threat and be pleasantly surprised if it doesn't materialize than the other way around. Assume everything's going to be fine and then get caught with your pants down if there's a problem.
Stephen in Elk Grove, California, first-time caller. Hi, Stephen. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
Great, thank you.
I wanted to talk about a sighting I had not too long ago when I was looking up. I wasn't a believer at the time. I was looking up at the stars, usually me and my friends, and we usually look at the North Star. That's what we call it over here. And for some odd reason, when I was looking at it, it started getting bigger and bigger. And I was just, in my mind, I was thinking about it. I was like, I think this is probably just an asteroid about to hit or something, because it was getting bigger. The star was getting bigger. And I told my friend, come here, there's a rock about to hit. And they're like, where? So by the time I grabbed my friend's head and showed to the direction where this rock was at, it's going to sound crazy, but it turned into this dish shape, and it looked like it had a bite mark at the end of it. And the color of it was like the sun in the morning. You know how it doesn't burn your eyes?
Right. It's got that glow to it.
Yeah, it had that glow to it, like if maybe it was coming, maybe our atmosphere or something got hot. But anyway, it started gliding, and it was pretty big. It was probably the size of, I'm going to say, like two football fields, you know. And it was just gliding, and then disappeared over the mountains. And ever since then, I had like questions, like what was this that I seen? I never believed in UFOs, you know. This is crazy talk. And then the more I did my research, the more it kind of got to me. I got into the Bible and started doing my thinking, like, maybe these UFOs are aliens. They're one and the same thing, you know, because and the Bible tells us to look up to the heavens, look up to the sky. And to this day, there's still a war in the heavens. So who knows that Lucifer is not out there with his, you know,
posse. Well, there are some who believe that very intensely, Nick. We only have about a minute or so left, but have you looked at the Bible in UFOs, Nick?
There is a passage in the book of Ephesians which talks about Satan in terms of the prince of the power of the air. And that quote seems to have led a number of people, both in the UK and the US government, to believe that this is demonic. And I mentioned earlier the roadblocks that people like Luis Elizondo encountered. Some of those roadblocks are from conservative religious people who think this is demonic. And it's, you know, I don't believe that myself, but it does get in the way, I think, of scientific research and investigation. But you can't legislate what people believe.
Where can people get your book, Blood Brothers?
It's all on nickpope.net, all on my website. There's a book section with links to it on Amazon.
Nick, when do I see you at a next event? What's your agenda?
Well, I have AlienCon coming up next week in Los Angeles. Then I'm doing a SolFest up in the Pacific Northwest at the end of the month, and doing Laughlin in November. And I've probably forgotten a whole bunch of other things. I seem to be pretty busy at the moment.
All right, my friend. Be well. Nick Pope, his website, nickpope.net. He is one of the world's greatest researchers on UFOs. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Badal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.